Illuminati Project Memo 19, 8/9. JM, I wish you would explain to me how your interest in the numbers 5 and 23 fit in with this Illuminati project. This is all I've been able to unearth so far on the number mystery, and I hope you find it enlightening. It's from a book of mathematical and logical paradoxes, How to Torture Your Mind, edited by Ralph L. Woods, Funk and Wagnalls, New York, 1969, page 128. 2 and 3 are even and odd. 2 and 3 are 5. Therefore, 5 is both even and odd. The damn book, by the way, provides no solutions to the paradoxes. I could sense the fallacy in that one right away, but it took me hours and a headache before I could state it in precise words. Hope this helps you. Anyway, for me, it was a relief from the really frightening stuff I've been tracking down lately. Pat. There were 2 further memos in the box, on different stationeries and by different typewriters. The first was brief. April the 4th, Research Department. I am seriously concerned about Pat's absence from the office and the fact that she doesn't answer the phone when we call her. Would you send somebody to her apartment to talk to the landlord and try to find out what has happened to her? Joe Malik, editor. The last memo was the oldest in the lot and already yellowing at the edges. It said, Dear Mr. Mallory, the information and books you requested are enclosed at length. In case you were rushed, here is a quick summary. 1. Billy Graham was in Australia, making public appearances all through last week. There is no way he could have gotten to Chicago. 2. Satanism and witchcraft both still exist in the modern world. The two are often confused by Orthodox Christian writers. But objective observers agree that there is a difference. Satanism is a Christian heresy, the ultimate heresy, one might say, but witchcraft is pre-Christian in origin and has nothing to do with the Christian god or the Christian devil. The witches worship a goddess called Dana or Tana, who goes back to the Stone Age, probably. 3. The John Dillinger Died for You Society has its headquarters in Mad Dog, Texas, but was founded in Austin, Texas, several years ago. It's some kind of poker-faced joke, and is affiliated with the Bavarian Illuminati, another bizarre bunch at the Berkeley campus of the University of California. The Illuminati pretend to be a cabal of conspirators who run the whole world behind the scenes. If you suspect either of these groups of being involved in something sinister, you've probably just fallen for one of their put-ons. W.H.
So this thing was already linked to Mad Dog several years ago,
Saul said thoughtfully.
And Malik was already assuming an alternative identity, since the letter is obviously addressed to him. And also, as I'd begun to suspect as we read this stuff, the Illuminati have their own brand of humor.
Deduce me one more deduction,
Barney said.
Who the hell is this W.H.?
People have been asking that for 300 years,
Saul said absently.
Huh?
I'm being whimsical. Shakespeare's sonnets are dedicated to a Mr. W.H., but I don't think we have to worry that this is the same one. This case is as nutty as a squirrel's dinner, but I don't really think it's that nutty.
He added,
We can be grateful for one thing at least. The Illuminati doesn't really run the world. They're just trying.
Barney frowned, perplexed.
How do you make that one?
Simple. The same way I know they're a right-wing organization, not left-wing.
We're not all geniuses,
Barney said.
Take it a step at a time, will you?
How many contradictions did you spot in these memos? I counted 13. This researcher, Pat, saw it too. The evidence is deliberately warped and twisted, all of it. Not just the East Village other chart, is a mixture of fact and fiction.
Saul lit his pipe and settled back in his chair. In 1921, reading Arthur Conan Doyle, he first began playing these scenes in imagination.
In the first place, either the Illuminati want publicity or they don't. If they control everything, they want publicity. They'd be on billboards more often than Coca-Cola and on TV more often than Lucille Ball. On the other hand, if they control everything and don't want publicity, none of these magazines and books would have survived. They would have disappeared from libraries, bookstores, and publishers' warehouses. This researcher, Pat, never would have found them. In the second place, if you want to recruit people into a conspiracy, besides idealism and whatever other noble motives you might exploit in them, you would always exploit hope. You would exaggerate the size and the power of the conspiracy because most people want to join the winning side. Therefore, all assertions about the actual strength of the Illuminati should be regarded a fortiori, a suspect, like the voters' polls released by candidates before elections. Finally, it always pays to frighten the opposition. Therefore, a conspiracy will exhibit the same behavior that ethnologists have observed in animals under attack. It will puff itself up and try to look bigger. In short, potential or actual recruits and potential and actual enemies will both be given the same false impression, that the Illuminati is twice or 10 times or 100 times its actual size. This is logical. But my first point was empirical. The memos do exist, and therefore logic and empiricism confirm each other. The Illuminati are not able to control everything. What then? They've been around a long time, and they're as tireless as the Russian mathematician who worked out pi to the 1,000th place. The probability, then, is that they control some things and influence a hell of a lot more. This probability increases as you think back over the memos. The two chief Arabic branches, the Hashishim and the Rashinaya, they were both wiped out. The Italian Illuminati were crushed in 1507. Weishaupt's order was suppressed by the Bavarian government in 1785, and so forth. If they were behind the French Revolution, they influenced rather than controlled, because Napoleon undid everything the Jacobins started. That they had a hand in both Soviet communism and German fascism is plausible, considering the many similarities between the two. But if they controlled both, why did the two take opposite sides in the Second World War? And if they ran both the Federalist Party through Washington and the Democratic Republicans through Jefferson, what was the purpose of Aaron Burr counter-revolution, which they are also supposed to be behind? The picture I get, he's not a grand puppet master moving everybody on invisible strings, but some sort of million-armed octopus. A millipus, let's call it. Constantly reaching out tentacles and often drawing back nothing but a bloody stump, crying, "Foiled again." But the millipus is very busy and quite resourceful. If it controlled the planet, it could choose either operating in the open or retaining secrecy. But since it doesn't have that omnipotence yet, it must choose to be as anonymous as possible. Therefore, many of its tentacles will be probing around in the areas of publication and communications. It wants to know when somebody is investigating it or getting ready to publicize an investigation he's already completed. Finding such a person, it then has two choices: kill him or neutralize him. Killing may be resorted to in certain emergencies, but will be avoided when possible. You never know when a person of that sort has stashed extra copies of his documents in various unexpected places to be released in the event of his death. Neutralization is best, almost always.
Saul paused to relight his pipe, and Muldoon thought, the most unrealistic aspect of Doyle's stories is Watson's admiration at these moments. I'm just irritated because he makes me feel like a chump for not seeing it myself.
Go ahead,
he said gruffly, saving his own deductions until Saul was finished.
The best form of neutralization is recruitment, of course. But any crude and hurried effort at recruitment is known as taking your pants down in the espionage business because it makes you more vulnerable. The safest approach is gradual recruitment, disguised as something else. The best disguise, of course, is the pretense of helping the subject in his investigation. This also opens the second and preferable option, which is leading him on a wild goose chase, sending him looking for Illuminati in organizations which they have never really infiltrated, feeding him balderdash like that stuff about the Illuminati coming from the planet Vulcan or being descended from Eve and the serpent. Best of all, though, is telling him the purpose of the conspiracy is something other than it actually is. Especially if the story you sell him is in keeping with his own ideals, since this can then shade over into recruitment. Now, the sources this Pat unearthed mostly seem to come to one of two conclusions. The Illuminati doesn't exist anymore. Or, the Illuminati is virtually identical with Russian communism. The first I reject, because Malik and Pat have both disappeared, and two buildings, one here in New York and one way down in Mad Dog, have been bombed in a series palpably linked with an investigation of the Illuminati. You've already accepted that, but the next step is just as obvious. If the Illuminati tries to distort whatever publicity cannot be avoided, then we should look at the idea that the Illuminati is communist-orientated as skeptically as we look at the idea that they don't even exist. So, let's look at the opposite hypothesis. Could the Illuminati be a far-right or fascist group? Well, if Malik's information was in any way accurate, they seem to have some kind of special headquarters or central office in Mad Dog, and that's Ku Klux and God's Lightning territory. Also, whatever their history before Adam Weishaupt, they seem to have gone through some reformation and revitalization under his leadership. He was a German and an ex-Catholic, just like Hitler. One of his illuminated lodges survived long enough to recruit Hitler in 1923, according to a memo that might be the most accurate one in the lot, for all we know. Considering the proclivities of the German character, Weishaupt could likely be an anti-Semite. Most historians I've read on Nazi Germany agree to at least the possibility that there was a secret doctrine which only the top Nazis shared among themselves and didn't tell the rest of the party. That doctrine might be pure Illuminism. Take up the many doctrine links between Illuminism and Freemasonry, and the known anti-Catholicism of the Masonic movement. Add in the fact that ex-Catholics are frequently bitter against the Church, and both Weishaupt and Hitler were ex-Catholics. And we get a hypothetical anti-Jewish, anti-Catholic, semi-mystical doctrine that would sell equally well in Germany and in parts of America. Finally, while some left extremists might want to kill the Kennedys and Reverend King, all three were more likely targets for right-wingers, and the Kennedys would be especially abhorrent to anti-Catholic rightists. A last point,
Soule said.
Consider the left-wing orientation of confrontation. The editor, Malik, would probably not give much credence to most of the sources quoted in the memos, since the majority are from rightist publications, and most of them allege that the Illuminati is a leftist plot. His most probable reaction would be to dismiss this as another right-wing paranoia, unless he had other sources besides his own research department. Notice how cagey he is. He doesn't tell his associate editor, Peter Jackson, anything about the Illuminati itself, just that he wants a new investigation of the last decade's assassinations. The bottom memo is so old and yellow, it suggests he got his first clue several years ago, but didn't act. Pat asks him why he's hiding all this from the reporter, George Dorn. Finally, he disappears. He was getting information from someplace else, and it revealed a plot he could believe in and finally fear. That would probably be a fascist plot, anti-Catholic, anti-Jewish, and anti-Negro.
Muldoon grinned.
For once I don't have to play Watson,
he thought.
Brilliant,
he said.
You never cease to amaze me, Saul. Would you glance at this, though, and tell me how it fits in?
He handed over a piece of paper.
I found it in a book on Malik's bedside table.
The paper was a brief scrawl in the same handwriting as the occasional jottings on the bottoms of Pat's memos. Prez Garfield. killed by Charles Guiteau, a Roman Catholic. Prez McKinley, ditto by Leon Czolgosz, a Roman Catholic. Prez Theodore Roosevelt, attempted assassination by John Schrank, a Roman Catholic. Prez Franklin Roosevelt, attempted assassination by Giuseppe Zangara, a Roman Catholic. President Harry Truman, attempted assassination by Grisaglio Torricola and Oscar Colacho, two Roman Catholics. Prez Woodrow Wilson, somewhat mysterious death while tended by a Roman Catholic nurse. Prez Warren Harding, another mysterious death. One rumour, it was suicide, also attended by a Catholic nurse. Prez John Kennedy, assassination inadequately explained. Head of CIA, then, was John McCone, a Roman Catholic, who helped write the inconclusive and contradictory Warren Report. House of Representatives, March 1st, 1964. Five congressmen wounded by Lebron Miranda Cordero Rodriguez assassination squad, all Roman Catholics. When Saul looked up, Barney said pleasantly,
I found it in a book, like I said. The book was Rome's Responsibility for the Assassination of Abraham Lincoln by General Thomas M. Harris. Harris points out that John Wilkes Booth, the Surratt family, and all the other conspirators were Catholics, and argues they are acting under orders from the Jesuits.
Barney paused to enjoy Saul's expression and went on.
It occurs to me that, using your principle that most of the memos are full of false leads, we might question the idea that the Illuminati uses the Masons as a front to gather recruits. They would probably need some similar organization, though, one that exists all over the world, has mysterious rites and secrets, inner orders to which a select few are recruited, and a pyramidal authoritarian structure compelling everybody to take commands from above, whether they understand them or not. One such organization is the Roman Catholic Church.
Saul picked up his pipe from the floor. He didn't seem to remember having dropped it.
My turn to say brilliant,
he murmured finally.
Are you going to stop going to Mass on Sunday? Do you really believe it?
Muldoon laughed.
After 20 years,
he said,
I finally did it. I got one jump ahead of you, Saul. You were standing face to face with the truth, eyeball to eyeball, nose to nose, mouth to mouth, but you were so close that your eyes crossed and you saw it backward. No, it's not the Catholic Church. You made a good guess in saying it was anti-Catholic as well as anti-Jewish and anti-Negro. But it's inside the Catholic Church, and always has been. In fact, the Church's efforts to root it out have given Holy Mother Rome a very unfortunate reputation for paranoia and hysteria. Its agents make a special effort to enter the priesthood in order to obtain holy objects for use in their own bizarre rites. They also try to rise as high in the Church as they can to destroy it from within. Many times they've recruited and corrupted whole parishes, whole orders of clergy, even whole provinces. They probably got the Weishaupt when he was still a Jesuit. They've infiltrated that order several times in history, and the Dominicans even more. If caught in criminal acts, they make sure that their cover Catholicism and not their true faith is publicized, just like this list of assassins. Their god is called the Lightbearer, and that's probably where the word illumination comes from. And Malik asked about him a long time ago and was told by this W.H., quite correctly, that they still exist. I'm talking about the Satanists, of course.
Of course,
Saul repeated softly.
Of course. That Pentagon that keeps popping up, it's in the middle of the pentacle for summoning the devil. Fascism is their only political facet. Basically, they're a theology, or an anti-theology, I guess. But what in hell, literally in hell, is their ultimate objective, then?
Don't ask me.
Barney shrugged.
I can follow my brother when he talks about the history of Satanism, but not when he tries to explain its motivations. He uses technical, theological terms about immanentizing the eschaton. But all I can understand is that it has something to do with bringing on the end of the world.
Saul turned ashen.
Barney,
he cried.
My God, Fernando Poole.
But that was settled.
That's just it. The usual technique of the false front. The real threat is coming from somewhere else, and they mean to do it this time.
Muldoon shook his head.
But they must be crazy.
Everybody's crazy.
Saul said patiently.
If you don't understand his motives.
He held up his tie.
Imagine you arrive in a flying saucer from Mars, or from Vulcan, like the Illuminati did, according to one of our allegedly reliable sources. You see me get up this morning and for no clear reason wrap this cloth around my neck, in spite of the heat. What explanation can you think of? I'm a fetishist, a nut, in other words. Most human behavior is that sort, not orientated to survival, but some symbol system that people believe in. Long hair, short hair, fish on Friday, no pork, rising when the judge enters the room. All symbols, symbols, symbols. Sure, the Illuminati are crazy from our point of view. But from their point of view, we're crazy. If we can find out what they believe, what their symbols mean to them, we'll understand why they want to kill most of the rest of us or all of the rest of us. Barney, call your brother. Get him out of bed. I want to find out more about Satanism.
The devil, the president shouted on March 27.
Nuclear war over an insignificant place like Fernando Po, you must be mental. The American people are tired of our army policing the whole world. Let Equatorial Guinea fish its own nuts out of the troubled waters, or whatever that expression is.
Wait, said the director of the CIA.
Let me show you these aerial photographs.
Back at the Watergate, G. Gordon Liddy carefully aims his pistol and shoots out the streetlight. In memory, he's in an old castle at Millbrook, New York, eagerly searching for naked women and not finding any. Beside him, Professor Timothy Leary is saying, with maddening serenity,
"But science is the most ecstatic kick of all. The intelligence of the galaxy is revealed in every atom, every gene, every cell."
"We'll get him back," Liddy thinks savagely, "if we have to assassinate the whole Swiss government. That man is not going to remain free." Beside him, Bernard Barker shifts nervously, as in right angular time a future president metamorphoses the plumbers into the cesspool cleaners. But now, inside the Watergate, the Illuminati bug is unnoticed by those planting the creep bug, although both were subsequently found by the technicians installing the bugger bug.
"It's the same intelligence making endlessly meaningful patterns,"
Dr. Leary goes on enthusiastically.
"Here, kitty, kitty,"
Hagbard repeats for the 109th time.
"The devil,"
Father James Augustine Muldoon repeated.
"Well, that's a very complicated story. Do you want me to go all the way back to Gnosticism?"
Saul, listening on the extension phone, nodded a vigorous affirmative.
"Go back as far as you have to,"
Barney said.
"This is a complicated matter we're trying to untangle here." "Okay, I'll try to remember you're not in my theology class at Fordham and keep this as brief as I can."
The priest's voice faded and then came back. Probably he was shifting the phone as he got out of bed and moved to a chair. Saul guessed.
"There were many approaches to Gnosticism,"
the voice went on in a moment.
"All of them centered on gnosis. Direct experience of God, as distinguished from mere knowledge about God. The search for gnosis, or illumination as it was sometimes called, took many odd forms, some of them probably similar to Oriental yogas, and some of them using the very same drugs that modern rebels against the slow path of Orthodox religion have rediscovered. Naturally, with such a variety of paths to gnosis, different pilots would land at different ports, each insisting he had found the real New Jerusalem. Mystics are all a bit funny in the head anyway,"
the priest added cynically,
"which is why the church locks them up in mental hospitals and euphemistically calls these institutions monasteries. But I digress. What you're interested in, I guess, is Cainism and Manichaeanism. The former regarded Cain as a specially holy figure because he was the first murderer. You have to be a mystic yourself to understand that kind of logic. The notion was that by bringing murder into the world, Cain created an opportunity for people to renounce murder. But then other Cainites went further. Paradox always seems to breed one more paradox, and heresy creates more heresy, and ended up glorifying murder, along with all the other sins. The credo was that you should commit every sin possible just to give yourself a chance to win a really difficult redemption after repenting. Also, it gave God a chance to be especially generous when he forgave you. Related ideas popped up in Tantric Buddhism about the same time, and it's a great historical mystery which group of lunatics, East or West, was influencing the other. Does any of this help you so far?
I bet, Barney said. About this gnosis,
Saul asked.
Is this the orthodox theological position that the illuminations or visions were actually coming from the devil and not from God?
Yes. That's where Manichaeanism enters the picture,
Father Muldoon said.
The Manichaeans made exactly the same charge against the Orthodox Church. According to their way of looking at it, the God of Orthodox Christianity and Orthodox Judaism was the devil. The God they contacted through their own peculiar rites was the real God. This, of course, is still the teaching of Satanists today.
And,
Saul asked, beginning to intuit what the answer would be,
what is all this to do with atomic energy?
With atomic energy? Nothing at all. At least, nothing I can see.
Why is Satan called the Lightbringer?
Saul plunged on, convinced he was on the right track.
The Manichaeans reject the physical universe,
the priest said slowly.
They say that the true God, their God, would never lower himself to mess around with the matter. The God who created the world, our God, Jehovah, they call Panergia, which has the connotations of a kind of blind, stupid, blundering force rather than a truly intelligent being. The realm which their God inhabits is pure spirit of pure light. Hence, he is called the Lightbringer, and this universe is always called the realm of darkness. But they didn't know about atomic energy in those days, did they?
The last sentence has started as a statement and ended as a question.
That's what I'm wondering,
Saul said.
Atomic power releases a lot of light, doesn't it? And it sure would immanentize the eschaton if enough atomic power was unleashed at once, wouldn't it?
Fernando Po,
the priest exclaimed.
Is this connected with Fernando Po?
I'm beginning to think so,
Saul said.
I'm also beginning to think we've stayed in one place a long time using a phone that is almost certainly tapped. We better get moving.
Thanks, Water. You're quite welcome. Although I'm sure I don't know what you're getting at,
the priest said.
If you think Satanists control the United States government, a few priests would agree with you, especially the Berrigan brothers. But I don't see how this can be a police matter. Does the New York Police Department now maintain a Bureau of Holy Inquisitions?
Don't mind him,
Barney said softly.
He's very cynical about dogma, like most clergymen these days. I heard that,
the priest said.
I may be cynical, but I really don't think Satanism is a joking matter. And your friend's theory is very plausible in its way. After all, the Satanist motive in infiltrating the church in the old days was to disgrace the institution thought to represent God on earth. Now that the United States government makes the same claim, well, that may be a joke or a paradox on my part, but it's the way their minds work, too. I'm a professional cynic. A theologian must be these days if he isn't going to seem a total fool to young people with their skeptical minds. But I'm orthodox or downright reactionary about the Inquisitions. I've read all the rationalist historians, of course, and there was certainly an element of hysteria in the church in those days, but still, Satanism is not any less frightening than cancer or plague. It is totally inimical to human life and, in fact, to all life. The church had good reasons to be afraid of it, just as people who are old enough to remember have good reasons to be panicky at any hint of a revival of Hitlerism.
Saul thought of the cryptic evasive phrases in Eliphas Levi, the monstrous gnosis of Manes, the cultus of material fire. And nearly 10 years ago, the hippies gathered at the Pentagon, hanging flowers on the MP's rifles, chanting, "Out, demon, out! Hiroshima! The white light of the void!"
"Wait," Saul said. "Is there more to it than just ideas about killing? Isn't killing a mystical experience to the Satanists?"
Of course,
the priest replied.
That's the whole point. They want gnosis, personal experience, not dogma, which is somebody else's word. Rationalists are always attacking dogma for causing fanaticism, but the worst fanatics start from gnosis. Modern psychologists are just beginning to understand some of this. You know how people in explosive group therapy sessions talk about sudden bursts of energy occurring in the whole group at once? One can get the same effect with dancing and drum beating. That's what it's called, a primitive religion. Use drugs nowadays, and you're a hippie. Do it with sex, and you're a witch, or one of the Knights Templar. Mass participation in an animal sacrifice has the same effect. Human sacrifice has been used in many religions, including the Aztec cult everybody has heard about, as well as in Satanism. Modern psychologists say that the force released is Freud's libidinal energy. Mystics call it prana, or the astral light. Whatever it is, human sacrifice seems to release more of it than sex or drugs or dancing or drum beating or any less violent method, and mass human sacrifice unleashes a ton of it. Now do you understand why I fear Satanism and half apologize for the Inquisition?
Yes,
Saul said absently.
And I'm beginning to share your fear.
A song he hated was pounding inside his skull. Wenn das Judenblut vom Messer spritz. He realized that he was holding the phone and seeing scenes 40 years ago in another country. He jerked himself back to attention as Muldoon thanked his brother again and hung up. Saul raised his eyes, and the two detectives exchanged glances of mutual dread. After a long pause, Muldoon said,
"We can't trust anybody with us. We can hardly trust each other."
Before Saul could answer, the phone rang. It was Danny Pricefixer at headquarters.
"Bad news. There was only one girl in research at Confrontation named Pat. Patricia Walsh, to be exact, and..."
"I know,"
Saul said wearily.
"She's disappeared, too."
"What are you going to do now? The FBI is still raising hell and demanding to know where you two are, and the commissioner is having the shits, the fits, and the blind staggers."
"Tell them,"
Saul said succinctly,
"that we've disappeared."
He hung up carefully and began stuffing the memos back into the box.
"Well now?"
Muldoon asked.
"We go underground, and we stick to this until we crack it or it kills us."
"How long is this, motherfucker?"
George asked, gesturing at the Danube 6 stories below. He and Stella were in their room at the Donau Hotel.
"You won't believe me,"
Stella replied, smiling.
"It's exactly 1,776 miles in length. 1776, George. The same as the date Weishaupt revived the Illuminati?" "Exactly,"
Stella grinned.
"We keep telling you, synchronicity is as universal as gravity. When you start looking, you find it everywhere." "Here's the money,"
Banana Nose Maldonado said generously, opening a briefcase full of crisp new bills. "It is now November the 23rd, 1963. They were meeting on a bench near Cleopatra's Needle in Central Park. The younger man, however, is nervous.
I want to tell you that my superior is very pleased. This will definitely decrease Bobby's power in the Justice Department and stop a lot of annoying investigations."
The younger man, Ben Volpe, gulps.
"Look, Mr. Maldonado, there's something I gotta tell you. I know how the Brotherhood is when somebody fucks up and hides it."
"You didn't fuck up,"
Banana Nose says, bewildered.
"In fact, you lucked out amazingly. That schmuck Oswald is gonna fry for it. He came along at just the right time. It was a real fortuna. Jesus, Mary, and Joseph."
Banana Nose sits up straight as the thought hits him.
You mean, did Oswald really do it? Did he shoot before you?"
No.
Volpe is miserable.
"Let me explain it as clearly as I can. I'm near on top of the Dallas County Records building like we planned, see? The motorcade turns onto Elm and heads for the underpass. I use my magnifying sight, swinging the whole gun around to look through it, just to make one last check that I have all the feds spotted. When I face the school book depository, I catch this rifle. That was Oswald, I guess. Then I check out the grassy knoll and, God damn, there's another cat with a rifle. I just went cold. I couldn't figure it out. While I'm in this state, like a zombie, a dog barks. And just then, the guy in the grassy knoll, calm and cool as if he was at a shooting range, lays three of them right into the car. That's it.
Volpe ends miserably.
I can't take the money. The Brotherhood would have my ass if they ever found out the truth.
Maldonado sat silently, rubbing his famous nose as he did when making a hard decision.
You're a good boy, Benny. I give you 10% of the money just for being honest. We need more honest young boys like you in the Brotherhood.
Volpe swallowed again and said,
There's one more thing I ought to tell you. I went down to the grassy knoll after the cops run from there to the school book depository. I thought I might find a guy who did the shooting still hanging around and tell you what he looked like. He was long gone, though. But here's what's so spooky. I ran into another galoot who was sneaking down from the triple underpass. Long, skinny guy with buck teeth. Kind of reminded me of a python or some kind of snake. He just looks at me in my umbrella and guesses what's in it. His mouth falls open. Jesus Christ and his black bastard brother Harry, he says. How the fuck many people does it take to kill a president these days?
And they're teaching them about perversions as well.
Smiling Jim was building towards his climax.
Homosexuality and lesbianism are being taught in our schools and we're paying for it out of our tax money. Now, is that communism or isn't it?